Hello and welcome to the September 25th, 2011 edition of Don't Let It Go Unheard, the podcast devoted to the discussion of news and politics from the perspective of Ayn Rand's philosophy, objectivism. I'm your host, Amy Peikoff, and here are the topics that I have planned for us to discuss today. First, there's a website called Attack Watch, and it's created by Obama for America. Is it just, as Obama's supporters have stated, a benign repository for reports on attacks on Obama's record? Is it just a place to get the straight scoop, or is it some cause for concern? Second, a recent statement by Massachusetts Senate candidate Elizabeth Warren attempts to justify theft from the wealthy by our government. What does it and statements like it by others bode for the political climate that we'll face in the next several years? Third, at the end of this year, the Obama administration plans to ban popular over-the-counter inhalers that are used for mild asthma on the grounds that they contain chlorofluorocarbons, which are supposed to deplete the ozone layer. We'll discuss what this reveals about the environmentalist agenda. And then in the second hour, I've got a couple stories, the Palestinians' application to the UN for statehood, and the GOP debate and straw poll in Florida. There's a lot of things to talk about there. Before we dive in, I've got some logistics for people who are attending live. There's two ways for you to interact with me. My first preference, it's the hand raise icon, which you see in the dock on the right-hand side of your screen. If you click it when the green arrow is pointing up, that means you'll be raising your hand, and then I can unmute you and have you speak with me live via audio. The other way is the questions box, and some people like to just type little comments there or questions. Sometimes you don't have a microphone that's appropriate for interaction, so you can use that box to type in text comments as well. Okay, so let's go ahead and dive in. As I said, I wanted to talk about Attack Watch. It's a website that was started by President Obama's campaign organization, which I believe is called Obama for America. And it was intended to be a repository for supporters to report attacks on Obama's record and just get the facts. The rollout for it, though, has not been met with anything that was positive. Instead, it's received scathing mockery, says a Fox News story on their website this week. A lot of conservatives have gone out there and decided to go ahead and attack it, attack Attack Watch. And if you've been on Twitter, I mean, the jokes and all the crazy stuff that's been going on there, I mean, it just was overwhelming. I think Twitter actually timed out due to overload at a certain point. Now, at first they said in this Fox News story, the onslaught of hilarity started because there was a parody that was created by an outfit called Misfit Politics. And they created this mock ad. I don't know how many of you saw it. I saw it. It was pretty funny. And it repeats the name Attack Watch in a voice that's like the Budweiser, "What's up?" or whatever. I can't do it very well. Sorry. Can you do it, Bosch? The Budweiser.
Yeah, well, yeah. I probably could do it, but.
Yeah, so the idea is that the Attack Watch is.
They say Attack Watch. Yeah. It's really, and each time they say it differently and they show it differently on screen. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, so it's pretty funny. And that seemed to start the ball rolling. And then, like I said, there was this Twitter campaign. And then on Facebook, they created a group called Attack Watch. They actually, the conservatives jumped on it right away and they actually closed out the real Attack Watch website, and they got the Facebook URL for Attack Watch as a group. On Twitter, one of the jokes was pretty funny. This is just an example of the kind of thing that was out there. It says, "Hey, Attack Watch," using the little hashtag so that, it's directed to them. I mean, the idea is that the Attack Watch website was looking on Twitter and maybe on Facebook, maybe on blogs, doing Google searches for anybody who would attack Obama, but would also, you're supposed to, if you're a good citizen and you support Obama, you're supposed to use the Attack Watch hashtag to tell them that there's an unfair attack on Obama. So instead, all these conservatives, they just started putting jokes and insults to Obama under the Attack Watch hashtag, so that when the Attack Watch website searched, that's what they found. So here's one.
It's a counter Attack Watch is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it said, "Hey, Attack Watch, I saw six ATMs in an alley killing a job. It looked like a hate crime. So that's just, you know, one example of the type of joke. Apparently, though, this is the fourth type of website, or the fourth website of this type, that has been launched in 3 years, where the Obama administration was attempting to respond to political attacks. And it also has, you know, all of these have backfired on the Obama team. The one that I remember, I don't remember four of them, maybe I don't keep enough track, but I remember flag@whitehouse.gov. And I don't know how long ago that was, where they wanted you to actually write to this email, flag@whitehouse.gov, to, you know, report unfair attacks on the president.
On Obamacare.
Yeah, on Obamacare, on anything. If you don't like something about the president, then you should report it. There was an opinion article that was published in the International Business Times, and it was written by a woman named Nadine Danino. And she said, the people who monitor the site Attack Watch will be quite busy, as Attack Watch only warrants more attacking. So the consensus among all the political commentators is that this has really backfired on the administration. Danino in particular wondered how many jobs the site created, or how long it took to conceive, in which case jobs could have been created instead. And then she quoted another person out on Twitter who said that if only the Obama administration could create an atmosphere where jobs materialized as quickly as Attack Watch jokes. And like I said, the Facebook group, I was in it, and it got so active I couldn't even keep up with the number of attacks that were out there. Now, for my part, I went ahead and wrote a blog post about this, and I called it Attack Watch as a Case Study in How Force Stops Thinking. And this is about 2 weeks ago, so I took a week off and all this backup came on. But I was happy to see this online rebellion. I saw this as a sign that the American sense of life, which I think is finding really good expression in the Tea Party movement lately. And I like to think of it as aptly symbolized by the classic Don't Tread on Me flag. This spirit I see as alive and well. But the reason that I ended up posting is because I saw the institution of this site and people's reaction to it as a case study in the application of Ayn Rand's observation that force stops thinking, which is a really abstract principle, right? And for some people, it's difficult to understand because it's not the case that as soon as the government initiates any force against you at all, or anybody initiates any force, we're all concerned about the government right now, but, you know, criminals do this too. It's not the case that once force is initiated, immediately all your thinking stops, right? But as Leonard Peikoff writes in Chapter 8 of his book, which is called Objectivism, The Philosophy of Ayn Rand, if you haven't seen it, he says, quote, if and to the extent that someone's gun becomes a man's epistemological court of final appeal, meaning that he's forcing you to agree with him, and then it replaces the law of identity, it replaces logic in your mind, then he says, to that extent, the man cannot think. So it's if and to the extent that force is brought in the place of an argument, then a man cannot think. And, you know, why is it that I see this as an example of that principle? And particularly, why do I see it as an example? Because Attack Watch itself is, unlike maybe the flag at whitehouse.gov, it's not technically by the government, right? It's by Obama's reelection campaign organization, Obama for America. It doesn't threaten the use of force of any kind. It doesn't say that there's going to be some penalties for criticizing Obama. So maybe it's not an example. But I think that the reason that people were concerned about this, and the reason that you saw phrases like enemies list or even political prisoner, I think it was Anne Barnhart who tweeted out, she said, make sure that you report me to Attack Watch because I would make a great political prisoner. That's what she said. So, you know, all of this came up. Why? Because they see this website as gathering information about opponents of Obama, and they see that that information could be used by Obama, who is a president, who has, you know, he's the most powerful person on the planet, supposedly. I don't know how much that's true anymore because United States clout has decreased due to presidents like Obama. But, you know, here's this very powerful person who could do a whole lot to mess your life up, especially now we've got Obamacare looming in the future. Government might start rationing health care. If you are an opponent, a political opponent of the administration, couldn't you see that you might be somebody to whom health care would be denied? So there's all kinds of things that people are anticipating. And why is it? It's because Obama has shown a clear track record of using the government to initiate force against people, perhaps more than any president before him. So I think this is why people are concerned about it, why they pay any attention to Attack Watch at all, because it's got this very, perhaps thickly, but it's a veiled threat of initiation of force by our government. So I asked the question in the blog post. I said, when you first heard about Attack Watch, did you, even for a millisecond, think in your mind, okay, I've been an outspoken critic of Obama and his policies, should I censor myself? Do I have to be a little bit more careful about it? Do you see what I mean? So what are your reactions to that? I mean, do you see it as something where they are actually, you know, threatening? There's some sort of veiled threat of force by our government. Did you react in that way where you thought, yeah, I'm going to have to censor myself a little bit. I'm going to have to be very careful in the way that I criticize Obama from here on out. I know that, you know, probably anybody who's listening to this show is not going to stop, you know, criticizing Obama. We're not going to stop doing it. But nonetheless, if it makes you have any, you know, cause for pause at all, you know, you think, okay, when Obamacare sets in, I'm going to be on the ration list or something like that, you might, you know, modify what you do just a little bit. You'd say, okay, well, you know, that might be perceived as unfair. You know, I'm going to have to edit myself a little bit. Anybody have that reaction? What about you, Bosch? You've been an outspoken critic.
Yeah, I mean, just more reason to criticize him.
More and, reason, you know, to criticize.
Oh yeah, and people who have not criticized him, they might be cowed, you know. And even if they think, well, this is bad, but since I've not really criticized him so far, let me not, you know, start now. Or they might even do it because there's now, you know, it'll give them a concrete reason to criticize him now, this particular thing. But although it's yet another example of the fact that he doesn't understand Americans. He doesn't. You know, his thinking is so foreign that he needs to find out after the fact how wrong it is.
Now,
after the fact.
So let me play devil's advocate, which I know you love, Bosch. You love devil's advocate. Think about, here we have a president who is probably the first one to come to power, so to speak, in the age with Facebook and blogs and Twitter and everything going like this. And they want to use these resources to protect Obama's image so that he can be reelected, right? And they suppose they literally want to protect him from inaccurate attacks and criticisms. There is plenty that is accurate to attack him about, but, you know, suppose that's what they want to do. How should they go about doing it so as to not have it be seen as some sort of threat against?
I don't think they can. I don't think they can.
But I mean, does that mean that anyone who is a sitting president in office cannot?
They have to take it. I mean, especially if they're rotten like Obama, they have to take it.
But surely they can defend themselves.
Or change their policies.
So,
they own, you know, he owns the media. I mean, what, 90% of the media is on board with him? 3 years after they see what hell he's brought into this country, they're still with him.
Right.
You know, he has them in his pocket, but he wants more. He said, well, I got them in my pocket, but that's not enough for him. Therefore, he wants all these social, you know, media things to actually get, you know, get on board with him and defend him. And I made three cartoons to Attack Watch. You know, there was one called Fight Obamaphobia, Attack Watchdogs. You know, I'm Barack Obama and I approve this message. There's another one with two huge eyes saying Attack Watch, and where Obama's himself is looking over. And the eyes, if you look closely, it's actually two barrels. It's a barrels of a shotgun, you know, a force. And then there was another one where Attack Watchdogs right now, you know, or right away, as he said in that one speech.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, just he will use everything
he possibly. Definitely this did not shut you down. In fact, it inspired you to do even more. And I mean, I said, I think that the fact that so many people were reacting in that way, coming back and using that Attack Watch tag to go ahead and, you know, say, okay, sign me up, put me on the list. If there's going to be a list being made of dissenters, principal dissenters, then put me on it. And of course, I put my post out there and publicized it too. So I assume if there is such a list, that I've wound up on it as well. But I can tell you, am I happy about this fact? Am I a little bit concerned?
That, yeah, we ought to be.
Right. But is it going to stop me? No. Now, Richard here, who I think is a new listener, welcome, Richard. He says, I absolutely did not react with fear about Attack Watch, but I can see where it may have affected others. He said, if the point was to uncover plots as a political strategy, you know, that exist out there, uncover plots to weaken Obama, using fear to produce silence would be counterproductive, I think. I think that's true. Now, one thing that we didn't talk about yet was the color scheme of the website. It looks rather intimidating, right? It's red, black, and white or something. Is that
as far as I know, those are Nazi colors, red, black, and white. They are.
So that's interesting, that the color scheme that they used. Maybe it's the fact that the website is asking people to report stuff out there, asking the general population to work as like Obama's supporters.
And he has an enemy list there. He has an enemies list, literally.
And he actually makes a list of
private citizens there. Yeah, okay. Private citizens are in there. Mark Stein was even put on there. He was a little disappointed because he was a little low on the list, but you know, it's pretty funny.
Well, he's a foreigner too. You have to, you know. Apparently, he was proud also that he's the only foreigner on the list.
All right.
Right. But let's see what we've also got. A couple more comments here. Jonathan says, I see it for the little time I've explored the site just as a forum for rebuttals for the critiques raised against a political candidate. For supporters, as of which I am not one, it is a great source of information against opponents.
One second.
He says,
sorry, this is the President of the United States of America here.
No, I know.
With full power. It's not just an individual.
Let me finish his comment. He says, what would have been great is an anti-Attack Watch where it takes the rebuttals and explains why they are wrong. He says, I also didn't extensively, who wants to extensively explore the site? But Jonathan said he didn't. Yeah, he's got better things to do with his time. Now, Edward says, there's nothing Obama and his supporters can do to preserve his image. It's reality versus image, and the government doesn't prescribe or define reality. Facts about the disastrous policies of the White House are still free to be had.
Yeah. They deny reality.
Batten says here, he says, the real question to ask liberals is that Attack Watch is so Nixonian. And he says, despite the fact that Richard Nixon never did anything like Attack Watch, you know, and of course we could ask, would he have if he was president now? He says, so why is it permissible under Barack Obama? Well, now, we know that our media doesn't treat Barack Obama the way that he's treated.
Everything he does is good by the fact that he does it. I mean, you know, that's it. That's their thing. I mean, everything he does is good by the fact that he does it. So that's it. And they just fall in line. And I still can't believe that there are so many of them are still behind him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty incredible. I mean, some of them are turning in a way because they want to save the party. But besides that, not really.
Yeah, now it says, Rosemary says, it looks like you have to join attackwatch.com to report an attack. Yeah, so it may be that unless you actually put your name there, but then a lot of people signed up. I think they said 100,000 signed up right away.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether those were friends or foes, deciding that they wanted to completely overwhelm and spam the site. What do they call that? A denial of service attack or something where they hit the site so much that they want to shut it down and crash it. But I mean, I don't know what should a sitting president do if he's running for re-election? He wants to collect information. He wants to get everybody excited that they can feel that they're part of defending their president whom they love. I mean, granted, we think Barack Obama is terrible. We think his policies are inimical to human life. You know, that's how bad he is. But suppose, I mean, you've got politicians, they're running for re-election, they're allowed to defend themselves. How should they do it? How should they do it? And I was wondering if anybody, I've got one hand from Deborah here. Hi, Deborah. What do you think? How should they do it if they want to do this in some way that is legitimate and isn't seen as a threat of force against citizens? Are you there, Deborah? Can you hear Deborah? Anybody?
No.
No? Okay. I think your microphone's not working. Okay, I muted her. I've got a couple comments here. Edward says, I joined for a while and got messages from the White House, but now they've stopped coming. And I think they may have sort of stopped functioning, the website. And then Batten says, the left harp on the McCarthy tactics, naming names, and here they are encouraging people to name names. Yes, it's true. Now, it's too bad that Deborah couldn't work. But what do you think, Bosch? Is there a way that they can legitimately do this?
Well, he's illegitimate in so many ways that, I mean, if you're talking about a proper president, to go out there and try to fight, I mean, you know, Bush, for however terrible I think he was, he never defended himself for the things that he did that were okay. You know, he never did.
Right.
He just let it, he was acting like Jesus, I guess, where come, you know, keep hitting me, keep killing me, whatever, it doesn't matter. That's that was a favorite philosopher, right? I don't know. I look at Obama as a bad guy, so everything he does is in sync with that. I mean, if he does something that is perceived as quote unquote good, it's in order to get it with more bad. Right. That's the way I see it. So, I mean, when it comes to him, I can't even consider that as a legitimate reason for anything he does.
I do think the context would be entirely different if we, you know, were confident that our government would not initiate force against us. But if we had that sort of government, then they wouldn't have to go to all these elaborate measures to try to get the truth out about various issues, because the sorts of issues that would matter, you know, with the president, I mean, maybe there'd be some, you know, disagreements about foreign policy and things that they could get out there. But it wouldn't seem such an issue if the government didn't have their hands in so many different things. And, you know, Obama's trying to do so many things with, I mean, one of the ones we'll talk about in a little bit with, you know, asthma inhalants and stuff. I mean, there's so much involvement in our lives and there's so much at stake that he's got a lot to talk about on such a site. And I think in a proper society, there just wouldn't be as much to talk about. It'd be a lot easier to keep the story straight because there'd be very few things that the government would have its hand in. But maybe not. I do think it's a legitimate question, though. You know, what can a sitting president do to try to defend himself against attacks when re-election is coming up?
Do his job and tell the truth. And you know, I mean, the fact is, he doesn't do his job. He does everything else besides it. You know, and that's why I think his lies are catching up with him so much now that he has to build this type of thing where he has to fight the actual accurate criticisms against him. Yeah. That's what he's fighting.
And
he's not fighting lies about him. You tell the truth about him, he's terrible. You know, why would we have to make up lies to prove that he's terrible?
Well, and he can always call a press conference whenever he wants to counter the lies about him, if there are lies about him.
And then he'll tell more lies.
Yeah. You know,
to counter those.
Now let's try Deborah again. Deborah, are you there?
Deborah? Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So, regarding your question about how could a sitting president properly sort of monitor attacks, I think that it might just be one of those things where if we lived in a fully free, proper society, it wouldn't be so much of an issue because people wouldn't see any kind of an implicit threat behind a president looking for those attacks.
Right.
And also, maybe it's also, I think, you guys might have hit on this a little bit, but it's got to do with the fact that he's asking just any private citizens to participate and sort of rat on each other.
Yeah.
That gives me the creeps, and I think that is probably a line that should be drawn in any situation. And in fact, the way that I found out about this attack watch, I had signed up for this competition, or not competition, but like a sweepstakes for... if you win, you get to have dinner with Obama. And I had it in my head that I'd get my chance to have a glorious, you know, opportunity to confront him if I won. So I went ahead and signed up. But now they've got my information. And so I got an email from Obama's campaign. And the way their emails sound is so creepy. I wish that I had saved it now. But I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe the way the emails sound, but it says, "Hello, friend. We're trying to find ways to counter all the attacks from the other side against Barack Obama." And they kind of try to paint like anyone who opposes him as being kind of a sinister, threatening element that it's your duty to to tell Obama's people about so that they can do the right thing and speak out against these.
Be a patriot. Be a patriot.
But just one more thing that I haven't heard mentioned yet is that, yeah, in private citizens, just individuals like you and I, are responding really wonderfully to this attack watch. But when it comes to businesses, they tend to be much more cowardly. And I think that it's partly just because the government can do so much to harm them and does constantly.
Right.
And Obama is doing something. He wants to essentially, by executive order, require any business that does that gets a government contract or does any business with the government, that company would have to disclose political contributions from their top executives and a lot of their employees, and not just to particular candidates, but also to political action committees and things like that. And so the company would have to give that information to the Obama administration before obtaining a contract. And it seems pretty clear that the purpose of that is for Obama to be able to choose people who are on his side and to intimidate companies, so that they don't make contributions to people who are against Obama.
So you'd have to do it before getting the contract or after getting the contract or both?
I think that it's before. I've been trying to look for an article because I haven't heard much about it for like a month or so, maybe. Okay. But it's...
If it was after, you could see that they'd want to prove that the contract wasn't awarded with regard to political contributions, right? And this is the dilemma, right? Because on the one hand, we'd all like to know that these contracts, and now because the government is doing so darn much, there's contracts out there for everything with all sorts of businesses. I mean, you know, how much of the spending that's out, you know, done out there right now is done by our federal government? It's scary.
I just found it. It says before.
Before. See, and if it's before, then I don't know. I mean, the government themselves knows whether they are awarding these contracts on the basis of political contributions, right? So it doesn't seem like they would have a legitimate need to get that information before, but that you would want to maybe get it after the contract is awarded to prove that there wasn't any corruption. Of course, the answer to all of this is get the government out of all this in the first place, so there aren't so many government contracts in the first place, and it's not a concern. But, you know, it's a hard thing. And I think it is true that, you know, why don't they, instead of having the Attack Watch website, and yes, they probably spent a lot of money having it designed and hosted and everything, but they should get their money back because it's ugly. They could spend that money hiring people to scour the web and all the usual suspects and places for stories that criticize Obama. They have those people read them and analyze it. Just do the work themselves. Why are they going to have the... American people, the private citizens, doing that work for them. So that would contribute.
Because he can't do it quietly. He's a drama queen, and he has to get in the heads of Americans. And this is true. I think he can't do it privately. He doesn't want to do it that way. He wants to do it loud.
That's a good point. Yeah.
In a way where people do want to get a little, you know, he wants to intimidate in his own little way as much as he can.
So you think the fact that he chose that route shows that his goal is at least somewhat intimidation. Versus their argument's going to be they're just trying to get people enthusiastic about...
Well, he can hide behind any kind of legitimate reason that he can muster, because he needs to. He can't tell the truth.
Well, and I think... they also want to put the idea in everyone's head that a lot of this that's out there is an attack, an unfair attack on Obama, you know, that it's not truthful. So if, you know, for instance, I mean, basically it's like giving a standing order. Some people who know Rand's philosophy know that there's this idea of giving yourself a standing order, you know, telling your subconscious to be on the lookout for X, Y, or Z. And in effect, what Obama's done is put in people's mind a standing order to look with the idea in their mind that these are going to be unfair, untruthful attacks on Obama. And so they're going to come with that bias, you know, and they, if they already like Obama, they're going to feel like they're being rewarded for turning these stories in. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
anyway.
Yeah, I think that's part of why he's asking people to turn people in. I think you're right. It's an attempt to intimidate. Because I don't think that there's anything that would really limit how much intimidation he would use other than what he can get away with.
Absolutely.
Right. But I think it's not just the issue of intimidation. It's the idea of just planting that seed in everyone's mind that when mm-hmm. they when they see attacks there, that their bias, what they should be looking for, is that the attack is unfair and untruthful. And I don't know how well, you know, what they achieve their objective, but they may have achieved their objective quite well among people who still naively support Obama. So I think that's interesting. Well, thanks, Deborah. I'm going to go ahead and go over to Cloud, who put his hand up.
A member called Attack Watch just joined. I'm joking.
Okay. Someone's here registered as Attack Watch on my podcast. Hello. Turn me in. Hi, Cloud. How are you?
I turned you in, Amy.
Did you? Thank you. I see here that you said that if you turn in 10 more people, you get a free ticket to the Democratic National Convention or something?
Backstage pass.
Backstage pass. Wow.
Yeah, you're hitting on the right issue now. The issue here is intimidation. And if he was, obviously, he's not interested in really uncovering issues of concern of the populace, because if that was the case, the website would say, if you have an issue you're concerned about that you think is harming the country in some way, post it here and we'll respond to it. You know, remember, this guy is a disciple of Saul Alinsky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his whole movement, I mean, you can see it in everything he does at the Congressional Black Caucus last night. You know, take off your slippers and put on your marching shoes, inciting, you know,
right.
not only class warfare, but with a racial bias towards it. You know, talking, when he's talking to the CBC, he's talking like a Chicago street thug on the street corner. You know, he bends to whatever audience he wants, but the whole idea is to get people to be thinking about reporting on their neighbors, because in the future, there's no doubt in my mind, that's where he wants to go. You know, it's the same thing that Castro's done in Cuba for the entire time that he's been there, with neighborhood snitches on every block. And, you know, Obama's got the same idea. You know, it's a pattern. You look back to flag at whitehouse.gov.
Right.
You know, the whole, which was, you know, a government-sponsored website.
Right. And, you know, especially now that the Tea Party has awoken people to the idea that we are rapidly careening towards a totalitarian form of government, people are saying, look, it's not a very far leap for someone like Obama to go from the mere gathering of information and addressing attacks to using that information in a way that is going to disadvantage the people who disagree with him. We suspect him of that. We don't trust him. And I mean, what is it now? Now the latest that I heard is that part of Obamacare requires that all of our health information be turned into the government. And I don't know if this is just the latest, you know, round of revelations that they're finally reading what's in Obamacare, and they sort of knew that it was there all along, or if it's, you know, requiring that we turn in this information much sooner than we had thought, you know, that they want to get that information in their coffers before Obamacare could be repealed or, you know, struck down by the Supreme Court. People are just not trusting this administration, and they're realizing the evil of the government initiation of force in a large way. And it's really good to see. I mean, were you pretty happy to see the reaction to Attack Watch, Cloud?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, what other choice is there? I mean, you have to speak up. If we just remain meek and quiet, you know, then he's accomplished his goal.
Right. And I'm glad to say that nobody has, including me, but perhaps I'm wimpier than some, because, you know, when I asked this question of people, some people said, oh, didn't hesitate for a second, didn't even break. In my mind, I can, you know, tell you introspectively, I had that just little second of, gosh, he's taking names. And did it, you know, did I not do the criticism that I was going to do? No, I went ahead and did it, but it may have affected how I carried it out just the slightest bit, because I know that I'm aware of having that realization, like, oh gosh, you know, we have a president who's maybe taking names. So
yeah, but now you've passed that point, Amy. You've already been down that road, so the next time you see something like this, you're
right,
going to recognize
right.
Already been there.
Aristotle's excellence is a habit, and I've developed the habit well, and so have you, right, Cloud?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks very much for your contribution here. We've got a few comments on the online here. Ed says that Obama expected the American public to become the agents of his Politburo, and that's true. Robert says, what criticism of Obama has not been truthful? I can't think of one. And I think it's because there's so many truthful criticisms that you can make, you wouldn't have to resort to an untruthful one in order to hit home. Then Penny, I think, is a new listener. Welcome, Penny. She says, if he gets people involved, those people will get others involved, and he'll get more votes from those that don't even know what is happening to them. And I think that's true. I'm hoping that people are more awake this election cycle than they were last election cycle. But I think there are a number of people out there who are just kind of sleepwalking, and maybe they could be taken in by something like this again, because that little standing order has been planted in their mind that they should be on the lookout for unfair, untruthful attacks on their president. They should be patriotic and send it in. Rosemary says they can be looking to identify loyal followers and people who can be used. Yes, that's true as well. They've, you know, got the Obama army willing to go door to door and knock on doors and encourage people to vote for Obama.
Can I just say something?
Sure.
I mean, if it was one single deal breaker when it came to Obama when he was running, to me personally, it was that he was friends with an unrepentant terrorist, Bill Ayers.
Right.
He had his political coming out party in 1995 at Bill Ayers' home. He worked with Bill Ayers as a colleague when they ran a school down, you know, to the ground. And he has never, as far as I know, denounced him. That's his friend.
Right.
And that's all he needs. He has no problem with terrorism. He has no problem with force. He just doesn't like to maybe do it himself. He doesn't like to see blood, personally. But he has no problem with it whatsoever.
No. And now Richard here brings up an interesting comment having to do with the issuing of contracts that we talked about, right? You know, the idea that if you issue a contract to a government contractor, then you have to get the campaign contribution info from him. Richard says it's a double-edged sword for Obama. He says in the case of Solyndra, an investigation is underway as to whether the White House engaged them because of contributions and not merit. He says the fact that Solyndra executives did contribute and that information was available at the time and now for later comparison to companies denied the same type of loan, then they can investigate this. Now, I saw this week that all the Solyndra executives pled the Fifth Amendment conveniently, so it's going to be a while, perhaps, before the full story comes out on that one. It's a typical corruption issue, and again, and this is something that Bastiat has this little monograph called The Law, and I always go back and remember what he said there. If government didn't have so much power, then there wouldn't be all this opportunity for corruption, and there wouldn't be anything that you could get by bribing your president, governor, etc. So the campaign contributions and all that wouldn't really matter so much in a proper society. I do need to draw the line and go ahead and go on to my next story. So thanks for everyone for talking about this one. I want to talk about Elizabeth Warren, who is a Senate candidate in Massachusetts. I think, Bosch, that you said that she is trying to get Scott Brown's seat. Is that correct?
The unseat, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And
she's trying to knock out the old Democrat, Scott Brown.
She has a very notorious statement that was released by her this week. And it was discussed quite well by Don Watkins on the Voices for Reason blog, which is published by the Ayn Rand Center for Individual Rights this week. But here's a statement from Elizabeth Warren. She says, quote, "There is nobody in this country who got rich on his own. Nobody. You built a factory out there?
Sorry. Yes. She was angry and yelling while she was saying this, just for record.
Excellent.
Very,
I'm sure she was quite animated given the content of this. It says, you built a factory out there? Good for you. But I want to be clear. You moved your goods to market on the roads the rest of us paid for. You hired workers the rest of us paid to educate. You were safe in your factory because of police forces and fire forces that the rest of us paid for. You didn't have to worry that marauding bands would come and seize everything at your factory and hire someone to protect against this because of the work the rest of us did. She says, now, look, you built a factory. It turned into something terrific. You got a great idea. God bless. Keep a big hunk of it. But part of the underlying social contract is that you take a hunk of that and pay forward for the next kid who comes along. End quote. So that is not me. All that stuff that I just read is not me. Don't take me out of context. that was a long quote, so don't take me and say that that's me. Now, of course, says Don Watkins, he points this out, he says, this ignores the benefits that are made possible by the factory or the good idea. But he says the most important thing, the most fundamental thing, is that Warren's rant is a disastrous view of the proper relationship between the individual and society. Warren's view, you know, society is a collective entity. It has its own interests and prerogatives. And so if you want to be part of society, says Watkins, you have to surrender some of your interests and prerogatives, above all, some of your freedom. Now, this is Watkins, you know, parroting Warren's view. Warren calls it a social contract, and Watkins says, I call it a social shakedown, because it is. It's achieved by force. You know, a social contract implies that somehow you voluntarily assented to it. It might be true that all the bunch of people through their tax dollars paid for roads, paid for education, paid for police forces, but it was paid for in a way where those taxes were taken by force. It wasn't voluntary. And there are, of course, those of us who believe that we think the government should be paid for voluntarily, and it shouldn't have involvement in education and not even roads in the most extreme way. Of course, we're way far from the type of society where we say, okay, we're going to switch over to a system of private roads versus public roads. But think how much cheaper it would be to educate children, build roads, if it wasn't done through the inefficiency of government. I mean, we've got the U.S. Postal Service about to go broke, about to stop service on Saturdays because they can't keep it together. UPS and FedEx, they seem to still be able to remain in business and, you know, come in under budget and all those sorts of things, but not the government. The government does things horribly inefficiently. So we have to pay for the price of using those roads. And of course, you know, the very rich who are taxed, are they taxed only the amount that they actually get in terms of government services? No, they always pay for much more. So it's not that you're paying for what you got from government. I mean, people should, of course, pay for the services that they would get from government. They, you know, should voluntarily pay some sort of tax to have the government enforce your contracts, protect your rights. But this goes way beyond that, and she has a lot more in mind. I mean, if she says, keep a big hunk of it, she doesn't say how much, but the implication is maybe you're keeping half of it. I mean, I don't know. And I am sure that someone like a Steve Jobs, in terms of the value that he gets from government, it would be a lot less than he pays in taxes. And I don't care what Warren Buffett says about the tax rate of the very rich. Even if it's a low tax rate for the very rich, they are paying a lot more than they actually get back in terms of government services, I would say. The other thing I don't like about this is that the implication is that marauding bands would come and seize everything but for government. So it buys into that Hobbesian idea that in the absence of government, life is solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short.
So the government is the marauding bands here.
Well, no, and that's true. And that's actually Deborah, whom you heard a little bit earlier. She wrote on the the page on Facebook. She said that, what? You know, who are these marauding bands? Actually, what do you think the IRS is? You know, absolutely. What she says, what is the purpose of the welfare state if not to seize which wealth created? Yeah, so there are these marauding bands now. It's not like you don't have them. It's just that it's done under the guise of government legitimacy, which is even worse, right, in some ways. At least you know who the criminals are when it's not government coming, you know, the imprimatur of government that's stamped on the initiation of force that we suffer all the time is one of the worst things. So
you do have a comment here by one poll. It says the factory paid the salaries that generated the taxes. We have to attack watching.
The factory paid the salaries. We better report him to Attack Watch right away. But I think we should let Cloud report him to Attack Watch, because if he reports 10 more, he gets his dream of being backstage at the Democratic National Convention. I think that's perfect. Now, Watkins says, of course, the solution is to base our society on the principle of individual rights. And, of course, if we do this, then people would pay for what they use from government. They would properly do that. But it's not a proper function of government to educate our children or even to build roads. We can have private roads, and it would be done a lot more cheaply, and then you would pay per usage. It's especially true today when we've got all the ability to have those little scanner, those transponders for the toll roads that they have. You can easily implement a system of private roads today, and it would be a lot more efficient. And there wouldn't be all those potholes doing damage to your cars. There wouldn't be as much traffic. It would be nirvana. I mean, think about that. Think about how much government taxes you additionally because they can't build their roads properly, and you spend all your life in traffic instead of being productive in your office. I've often thought about that. I'm actually a very bad person in traffic. So I'd like to say that they're taxing me even more in that way. Watkins continues in his excellent op-ed here that's on the blog. He says, in a voluntary society, there is no such thing as some undefined, unlimited debt to society. Those who educate workers, pave roads, or put out fires are fully remunerated for their work by their customers. End quote. And that's right. You know, in a proper society, you would just pay for it to be done. And the fact that people did pay for it today because they were forced to by an illegitimate government doesn't then create a debt on you. You were not the one, especially if you are, unlike most business people, unfortunately, if you're an outspoken adversary of big government, you're not supporting this sort of regime where everyone is forcibly taxed to pay for these things for you. But I think, you know, we've seen this before. The thing that bothers me about it most is this idea that there'd be these marauding bands. And the reason is that it's wrong, okay? I mean, there's two basic issues of what life would be like, or there's two basic approaches to what life would be like in the state of nature. One is that Hobbesian idea that in the absence of government, there'd be these marauding bands, and they'd come and steal things because nothing would stop them, that there isn't anything morally that would prevent people from, you know, pursuing their selfish interests, you know, as they call it, and come and steal your stuff, you know, hit you over the head and steal your cow and all these
things. People who believe that would do that. That's right. And they're projecting onto
us. There are people who believe that but for government, everybody would just go wild. Then there's the Lockean approach. And Locke did not think this. He was not that pessimistic about human nature. He thought, yes, there is morality apart from government, that people, you know, see that it's not in their self-interest to take things by force, that instead people are generally peaceful, criminals are the exception, and so that it wouldn't be the case that in the absence of government, it would be, you know, riots and looting in the street. It is true that with government, we are able to address the issue of criminals in a much more objective and efficient way if it's run properly. And so that is much preferable. And it's also true that we really didn't have a moral defense of the ethics that would show that it's not in your interest to initiate force, you know, that life isn't dog eat dog. We didn't have that true defense until Rand. Locke didn't have it. And I think that's one of the problems we have today. But you know, it really is. I think it says a lot about a person when the person says, hey, Without government, it would be chaos because everyone would see it's in their self-interest to go and steal and rob and do all these things.
No, that's the same argument some religions say about God. If there was no God, right, anything goes.
Right.
It's like, really? Okay. And so you'd be a scumbag and do anything? Okay.
Yeah.
That's it's confession more than anything.
Yeah. What are they saying about human nature when they say that?
So, and their nature, their personal nature.
Yeah. So you know, again, to answer her, your moral obligation is to pay only for what you use. The government is not performing only its proper functions right now. If it was, then all these other people wouldn't be paying for that stuff for you. You'd be paying for it for yourself. And security services, I think, in a proper society, would be a very small fraction of what people pay in taxes today. So, you know, it's way more expensive when it's being provided by force. You know, a loving government that says, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Terrible. Overall, I think it's a good sign that we're seeing things like this. And you know, you can also liken this comment from Elizabeth Warren to the comments of Obama, you know, at the Congressional Black Caucus. You can liken it to comments from Michael Moore, whom Bosch did a good job of wiping the floor of this week. What, apparently Michael Moore was making more class warfare-based comments. Is that right, Bosch?
Right. And he threatened, they won't be violent now, but he threatened a future violence. And I'm sorry, I saw a cartoon of his big fat head. It couldn't fit in the drawing. And it's called More. And like Obama whole poster, instead I have more lies, money, food, nihilism, statism. And then on his face, if you look close, it says, we'll eat for food.
Yeah. We'll eat for
less.
Food. Yeah.
Also, Michael Moore is less. Michael Dinty Moore. Michael Moore.
Yeah,
and
I know. I know.
But listen, what I'm saying is
this is not my favorite.
I know.
Humor.
But when he's a glutton, this is what happens. I mean, you know, is so. I wrote, the rich Michael Moore threatens violence against self, i.e., the rich.
Yeah.
And then in the title, it said Michael wants more. His middle name is Wants. Yeah.
I mean, the thing that I think is good that we're seeing these things in the media, and that you're also seeing, for instance, someone like a Rick Perry have to defend himself, yeah, and say that you don't have a heart unless you agree to subsidize the education of illegal aliens, right? That they're having to defend themselves because they realize now that they're being questioned, that they can't take the welfare state or the moral support for the welfare state for granted anymore, that yeah, they actually have to trot out these tired, worn out arguments in form of statism, you know, that nobody got rich in this country on his own. Yep. Nobody. Now, you know, she didn't get very sophisticated about this. She just said, you know, the roads were paid for and that you hired workers that we paid to educate. When they really get sophisticated about this, they say, well, look, you actually didn't think on your own. You didn't learn knowledge on your own. All the other knowledge was passed down to you. And so therefore you can't take credit for it. And so therefore, so all these arguments are coming out again, and we're going to have to address them. I think it's a good sign because it does show that this welfare state is not taken for granted, that everyone is starting to question the moral support for the welfare state, whether they're doing it on moral principle or whether they're doing it because the economy is in a really bad way and they know that the entitlement state is not sustainable financially, right? I think that remains to be seen, but it is starting to get kind of ugly out there. And like you said, with Moore, there was a less thinly, or I guess a more thinly veiled threat of violence back there. I saw a little bit of a threat of violence in this statement of Warren when she talks about the marauding bands, right?
Absolutely.
So, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What were you going to say, Bosch?
I forgot.
Oh, that's terrible.
I did.
The one question I have is, now that this is actually becoming an issue again, will the average politician be able to answer someone like Elizabeth Warren in a principled way? I don't see that from Perry, certainly, you know, who said you don't have a heart.
What I was saying was, yeah, They'll be a little more careful. And that's the only lesson they learn is, oh, okay, I can't pass that BS openly. I have to hide it a little better now. That's the only thing that these kind of characters learn. That they have to say it in a different way now, period.
They're trying to say it in a different way, but there's only so many ways to trot out the same
old, tired
arguments.
But people are starting to detect, and they're starting to detect a little more, so they got to be really stealth, and I don't think they have it in them to do that, because they want it. They want it now. You know, there's no... They want power. You know, how's the one character in Atlas Shrugged? We want power, and we mean it, you know.
See, I think that it's not that they're going to try to disguise their arguments. I think that they're probably going to bring them out increasingly more in the open, expect people to believe them. There's a lot of people who have been educated through the progressive education system, and they're going to go ahead and believe them.
I was thinking about a guy particularly like Perry, because he was literally booed. So when you're directly booed, you're going to try to maybe say it a different way. That's all.
And it's true. I think the conservatives might try to say it a different way. So, for example, Romney, at the last debate, not this, you know, most recent one, but the one before it, he said that at the heart of the GOP was a desire to help people in need. So he didn't say it's a moral duty, so to speak. He didn't say you have no heart if, but he's, you know, he says, I think this is at the heart of our party. So it didn't come across in pretty safe ground.
I guess he was in pretty safe ground. That's why he said it.
Yeah.
Which is terrible.
Yeah. And he thought he was. So I don't see at least the top two, supposedly top two candidates. I don't know if they're actually the top two anymore, but I don't see them being able to do it. I'm not sure that even, you know, a Herman Cain or a Gary Johnson, who are, they're better candidates, I don't know that they even could do it very well. Now, Ed here says, this is part and parcel of the whole giving back idea. Bill Gates, he says, for example, is giving back by dissolving his fortune at his father's instigation. He says, the question is, what was it that Bill Gates took that he's giving back? There's never an answer to that, except that Warren attempted to answer it with the social contract fraud.
Right.
Yeah, and Ed, like I said, the other argument that I've seen used is that nobody created anything on his own, that somehow thinking and knowledge is a collective entity. And so then the answer to that becomes a very sophisticated epistemological argument, where you talk about the fact that reason is an attribute of the individual. And while it's true that you can gain a benefit and learn from other people, if you don't learn and make that knowledge your own, you're not going to be a Bill Gates. But I of course, like Steve Jobs is a better example of the innovator. I happen to like the Mac products better than the Microsoft products that used to crash on me all the time. But you're not going to innovate unless you yourself do the thinking and the hard work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this idea that you don't get rich on your own, if it's true, if you know, everybody else has the opportunity to travel on the roads, everybody else has the opportunity to hire workers that everyone paid to educate, but then why aren't they doing it? It's because there is something that these innovators have done. They have used their minds and they have created. And I don't think they just don't want to acknowledge that. Tom here says, well, what she is saying implies that such things as roads and other public benefits wouldn't exist without the government. And I think that's true. She can't get out of this idea that the government is the provider of these things. But now people are starting to question even that. Most people won't go as extreme as saying, okay, we should get rid of public roads. I think that's a far down the road situation from now.
Someone wants to speak. I just want to let you know.
Who do we have?
Richard,
okay, let me find him. Hi, Richard, how are you?
Hi, good evening, Amy. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I'd like to tie the discussion about Elizabeth Warren with the previous discussion. Mm-hmm. In the previous discussion, the concept of standing order came up.
Right.
And in a sense, I've had a standing order on this issue of the social contract. Mm. And I'm seeing it more and more. I think the first really poignant event where this came out was in the past year, there were three debates in New York, Ayn Rand Institute and Demos.
Okay.
The second debate with Harry Binswanger and the fellow from Demos, the fellow from Demos, brought up his almost entire argument was based on social contract.
Mm-hmm.
And went back again and again and again to the Hobbesian view.
Right.
And that drove home the point of, oh, these people are basing their argument on the social contract. Now you raise Elizabeth Warren, and she explicitly used the social contract.
Right.
Today's the paper in New Jersey here is the Star Ledger. On the editorial section, the head of the editorial, head of the editorial page, had an article titled "Class Warfare? ? Bring It On."
Wow!
And I started to read it, and later on, here's what he says: "Quote: Now that social contract has been broken." Unquote. And he explicitly raised this social contract theory. I'm seeing it more and more, and I think your comment before, they're bringing it up more explicitly. Right. And I think we're gonna see this more and more, and I think it's important to watch out for when they refer to the social contract.
Right.
And I'm very glad to see Don Watkins had an answer. And I think that there is an opportunity here in response to that second debate. There was a discussion on the blog about the social contract theory. Okay. I think there's an opportunity for someone from an objectivist point of view to write an extensive article on what is wrong with the social contract concept.
Now, as I understand it, Harry Binswanger has done quite a bit of work on it. That's what I'm told, and I don't know whether he's going to come out with a published article about it or not, but, you know, what is it that you can actually agree to contractually in a proper society, and how would you go about doing it? The debate has come up on my blog with respect to the issue of jury duty, I kind of have, you know, I still have to think more about this issue. And I think this is, jury duty is, again, one of these issues that's way down the road. We have to get government out of so many things first. But you could, for instance, say that when you register to vote, then you agree to also participate or sign up for jury duty. But in that case, you would actually be explicitly opting in. You would be agreeing, to something contractually where you're getting a benefit. You, of course, even if you didn't sign up to vote, the government could still protect your rights if you chose to pay taxes, for instance, to have your contracts enforced in court, right? So you could still have your rights protected in various ways, but they could say, well, if you want to vote, then you have to also agree to sometimes perform jury duty under rules that are reasonable and fair. That, you know, the point I think that was made in this op-ed by Watkins, the one that I liked, is he says, there is no such thing as some undefined, unlimited debt to society. You would have to have, you'd have to find very defined things that you had agreed to and point to the way in which you agreed to it. I mean, the only thing that the government could do without your agreement is protect others from initiation of force by you. Otherwise, you'd say, well, if I want the government to protect me, I'm either going to have to pay for it, sign up in some way, something. And then at that point, you could decide, what did you sign up for in terms of participation with the government? And what is it reasonable to expect of you in return? It's not like if you don't, like, for instance, sign up to vote, it's not like it's going to be taxation without representation if you aren't allowed to vote, because the idea is that any proper government wouldn't be taking taxes from you involuntarily anyway. So these issues have come up, but I agree. A comprehensive article that actually talked about social contract theory, why it's wrong, why perhaps with respect to examples like jury duty that I'm talking about, that wouldn't be a case of the overall social contract theory, which is just rammed down your throat. It's an involuntary social contract, where you could handle some of these things in a very limited, truly contractual way. I think it'd be very interesting. I think you're right. There's a good opportunity to bring that in there. Did you have anything else briefly to say before we switch topics? We're hitting the top of the hour here.
Right. The thing that concerns me about Elizabeth Warren is that it's an unlimited, unchosen obligation that they're trying to get at.
Yeah.
And I think that has to be attacked and attacked vigorously, and to be shown why that's wrong.
Yes.
So that's about it.
That's what all of us will keep doing. And maybe, Richard, you can write a letter to the editor of the newspaper where you are. Okay, so as I
Robert said, Robert writes here, okay. Ayn Rand addresses the social contract in an untitled letter, quote unquote, in Philosophy Who Needs It. So maybe we should check that out.
Yeah, go take a look at that as well as a good reference. Thanks, Robert, for the reference.